It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Rob Vanstone, and welcome to the what I think will be the penultimate edition of the Rider Rumblings video podcast. We're going to do one next week as well, presumably after Rider General Manager Jeremy O'Day meets the media following the Grey Cup. I'm here with Dr. Murray McCormick, our freshly bespectacled football scribe. He's got new glasses, and as you can see, I need new ones. These things are bent, and the dog slept on them. So,
we also got haircuts.
I go this week.
We both got Grey Cup haircuts, too. Not the mind that noticeable, but we both got all cleaned up in case we're going to go into the Grey Cup.
Yeah, I got a haircut last week, and remember, there's so many jokes I can make here. Can I do it?
I guess I
did.
Did
your barber use sandpaper? I mean, there's so many tweezers. What kind of shampoo do you use? Weed killer? Like there's so many options here. So
as I've said before, he uses me to catch up with his other appointments. Takes him 10 minutes to do mine. And then he can catch up to the other 20 minutes in the half hour period. But I'll give Don White Oak a big shout out. He's been hard to believe, folks, been cutting my hair since 1999.
Boy, that's,
and he hasn't missed a spot.
Sat in the chair for 22 years.
Yeah,
long appointment, and he only charges you for $30. Not bad, or 20. What were you saying?
$20. Been great. Yeah, good friend, good golfer. Go see him at Victoria Square Mall. Anyway.
Maybe we'll get some sponsorships out of this. I've already mentioned Cornwall Optical. We're here to talk about the Rough Riders season-ending loss to the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Murray was there. I was not. 21-17, the Bombers won the West Final. There are so many directions to go. We could do a podcast that even goes longer than Murray's 22-year haircut, dissecting everything that needs to be dissected. What do you make of this? What do you make of that game, Murray? It was, in some ways, it was a microcosm of the season, but I think maybe the offense redeemed itself a little bit in that game, although they only scored 17 points.
I can't get over the fact they had 6 turnovers and lost, Rob.
Yeah.
I know there's many other issues in that game and things they did right, but they had 5 turnovers in the first half and generated 10 points. And I'm going, man, that's just not good enough. That's something your offense, somehow you got to go quick strike. You got to go fast action. You got to have a long drive. They had short fields. The Bombers, it could have easily been 21-7 for the Bombers or even higher than that if they managed to score on those turnovers because they were in the end zone.
Turnovers took points away from the Bombers too. I mean, Nick Dembski in the end zone and Drew Walutarski in the 2-yard line. I mean, not only did the Riders get the ball, but they generate the turnovers on the field. Although I'm not sure they generated the first one. Nick Dembski did.
But they still get credit. And give Eli Bucco great credit for that great return. What a great
opportunity for the fumble, forced fumble.
Forced fumble. And then Ed Gainey for being in the spot to get the pick. You know, and realize it's on Dembski for bobbling it. But Ed Gainey was in the spot to get the pick. So he gets the credit for it and good for him and that. But I'm going to tell you, Rob, did you ever feel any point of that game the Riders were going to beat the Blue Bombers?
Yeah, when Duke Williams caught that 67-yard touchdown pass.
Yeah.
And here's the last play of the third quarter, I guess, well, before the convert. And I thought, well, this is the Bomber team that's been impossible to score against in the second half this year. And the Rough Riders had not scored a touchdown against Winnipeg in either of the two regular season games, nor had they scored a touchdown against Winnipeg in the West Final in 2019. So they've gone 3 full games without scoring against Winnipeg.
Yeah.
And so when they got that touchdown, and that was their longest scoring play of the season by 43 yards. Yeah, the previous tie being Kian Schaefer-Baker with a 24-yarder. And then Duke Williams goes off for 67. And I thought, is that one of those plays that we're looking at, like we're looking at the Brian Walling run from 1989, or Tom Burgess to Jeff Fairholm and Ray Algard late in the second half against Edmonton in 89? Is that one of those plays that just, yeah, oh my goodness, look what they've done. Cody has pulled out another one. And then they start moving the ball. It's a couple of quick first downs, a very fortunate call again, that's when I got thinking about a tumor. I thought, okay, the command center totally botched that call. Can you imagine the outrage in Winnipeg if the Riders won? It's suddenly the football gods are smiling quite widely again in terms of in the direction of the Rough Riders. So after that Duke Williams penalty, the touchdown and the penalty, I got thinking there's something that's meant to be here. But one play that I think is being overlooked on the Riders' final, after they've gotten the two first downs. First down, they throw the slant to Kian Schaefer-Baker, doesn't make the catch. Mm-hmm. And so much has been made of that last pass to Mitch Pickton. But if that first down play is complete, and it should have been, then what? That play is, yeah, I think, the most underplayed crucial play of the game. The Pickton one isn't as big a deal to me as the one on first down that should have been caught.
And then they're in second and 10 and scrambling, and they converted two of the three. Also, the Bombers also ran the ball down their throat.
Oh, my goodness.
Like, I really liked Craig Dickinson. He shows a wry sense of humor. He goes, as he says, the only game time decision was how many yards Mr. Harris was going to gain.
Yeah.
And I went, and they also mentioned, he says, they're never going to trust another injury report about Andrew Harris.
And you can see through that coming out of Winnipeg, you have the IQ of a gerbil. I mean, honestly.
I meant to look it up. He had a 12-yard run where I think every rider hit him at one time and just kept going and going and going and thinking, man, this guy's not injured. He's going to carry them on his back. And he did, because one thing the Bombers did in the second half is they had long drives that ate up a lot of time.
Yeah, a 71-yarder and a 72-yarder that devoured all sorts of clock.
Like, what a great – what Buck Pearce deserves kudos for that type of offense. And just kind of like – I don't know if anybody saw the Monday night game last night with all the horrible weather. Mac Jones wins throwing three passes.
Yeah.
And the Patriots ran the ball like crazy. The Bombers took advantage of the weather conditions, was arguably the best back in the league, and jammed the ball down the Riders' throat. And I know it got close in the end, but in the second half, interesting stat. Aaron Jarrett had 68 yards in the first half and 68 yards in the second half.
Oh, wow.
But crazy enough, which ones do you think were more impactful? The second half, eh? Yeah. It was kind of weird that he did that. So there's a
– and what's amazing too is there were some runs that didn't look like he had anything and he'd get 5 yards.
Oh boy, just,
you know, he'd spin around. He'd turn a 7-yard carry into an 11-yard carry, and that was amazing.
And I know it's not an Andrew Harris rider, but I was in the Winnipeg Stadium. We sit in the end zone off to the side of it. So you have a look right down the field. And it's a pretty cool angle for a press box. So I would see Andrew Harris running up and down the sidelines after every time he was on the field. He never stopped running. Even when the defense was on the field, he kept moving, kept going to the sideline. So Andrew Harris was 100%. And there are other many reasons why the Riders lost, but Andrew Harris was just utilized so magnificently that I don't think the Riders, who have a pretty good run defense, you know, they've been pretty good against the run this year, just couldn't stop them. And that's another thing they have to take from that game and sort of, I don't know, examine and see what happened there. But another quick question. I think they only had four penalties for 50 yards, something like that.
Yeah,
so penalties weren't an issue, which we thought we'd been hammering at penalties being an issue for all along. So that wasn't really a big. There were some penalties, but there weren't.
And the only time we mentioned Nick Marshall was when he made an interception.
Yeah.
And you know, there was the Anthony Lanier penalty that when he barely touched Zach Collaro. Still, you can't go near the quarterback. And when he did that, I think that was a just call, a bit of a ticky tack one. But you've got him; they're making those calls when there's any kind of contact with a quarterback. That was the only really undisciplined penalty that they had all day. They generally played a pretty clean game. What's surprising to me is who would have thought? Let's say the Riders they play two postseason games, and if somebody had told you before the playoffs that in one game, Cody Fajardo will throw four interceptions, and in the next game, he will throw zero interceptions. Which playoff game do you think they'll win?
Exactly. Yeah, I know.
But it worked exactly counterintuitively. And it's so bizarre. It just, you never know with Canadian football. And we're starting to see in the playoffs, the Canadian Football League that we've come to enjoy over the years. And there has been that. I realize that's of absolutely no solace to Rough Rider fans who were hoping that you and I would be sitting in a hotel room in Hamilton today.
I don't think the weather conditions really dictate. They were bad. It was cold. It was windy. It was snowing all the time. The field, when I got there around 1:30-ish and finally got in, the field was clear. And then by the time I got kickoff, there was a fair bit of snow in the field. I don't think they, other than being the cold and the wind being something there, I don't think it was as bad as we ever wrote it out to be. But it still wasn't very pleasant. I can't imagine sitting in the stands for 3.5 hours like that to watch a game and cheering him on. But
yeah, but it wasn't the Vanier Cup either. The field didn't determine the way the game was played. It wasn't Monday Night Football where the weather conditions dictate how a team plays a game. I mean, that was, the teams were still able to do what they do. And
that couldn't happen.
I'm glad to see that the climate didn't influence the game.
As a Jets fan and not a Bombers fan, Rob, what a cool day to be a Jets fan and a Winnipeg sports fan.
What a cool day to be a Jets fan who's married to a Leafs fan.
Oh man, because I was having dinner after the game in this the bar in the hotel, and this woman who'd had a few drinks kept saying, "What a great sports day," and slurring her words. I thought she was pretty, no, just, and they met and give credit to the CFL and the NHL for both accommodating fans who wanted to go to both games and stuff. Just, you know, that's a great day, a memorable day for, like, you remember being in the womb at certain football games. If you're a young kid who was at the Bomber game and maybe had fortune enough to go to the Jets game or even watch it on TV, they'll remember 2021, that Sunday afternoon, or Sunday on December 5th. I think that's a pretty cool aspect of what happened. And I know,
Mark, go ahead.
One other quick other statement I want to make here. The unfortunate timing of the Bob Irving Ring of Honor induction happening and his banner being unveiled just as the Riders came onto the field. And people in Riderville in Winnipeg are calling the Riders classes and what and all these things. There's so much timing in a game on TV that the clock is that the Riders have to go out at that time to get on the field to make sure everything happened. I'm sure they didn't do it on purpose. I'm assuming that the ceremony ran a little long and it interfered with the Riders coming on the field. But it was a little,
a ceremony running long, that never happens.
Never happens. And I think Bob looked freezing, frozen cold out there standing on the field. But we had him on our podcast last week, and I got to talk to him a couple times on the weekend. And what, still coming up asking Ryder questions. Like, you know, you think of him, you do for that one. He could have mailed it in. He didn't mail it in. He had one of the classic calls to wrap up the Bombers and going to the Grey Cup. He doesn't get to call the Grey Cup. That's life in radio. He's not going to bemoan that fact. But
I still hate it.
Yeah, I know. But
like, that's just wrong.
It's just reality.
It's just not fair to the home team radio crews that travel with the team and go to practice every day, and then their team gets to the big game, and they're basically, they're sitting with us. And what more of an indignity could there be than sitting with us in a press box? And they've got to do something about that. I understand that the TSN's been a huge benefactor to the league, but I think you have to take into account certain constituencies within the league and be fair to them. And this monopolistic approach has just gotten a little bit too far with regard to the radio rights. It's not fair. It wouldn't have been fair to Derek Taylor. It's not fair to Bob Irving and Doug Brown. I find that so disappointing, that especially in this year of all years, with Bob Irving, just coincidentally, the Bombers being in a Grey Cup in Bob Irving's final year. They've got to find a way. At least let Bob call the final, the end of the game, or get him into the booth. They have to do something to acknowledge Bob Irving. He's too modest and too self-effacing to ever demand or insist upon it. And I think he would almost be embarrassed if somebody did. But honestly, I think somebody's got to take the initiative here and do the right thing.
Well, on Saturday, he was working as hard as he had as any other game, asking a few questions, doing his game charts, and he went out as, you know, he had the greatest job in the world, and he went on top of the world with the last call of the Bombers going to the Grey Cup, and I'm sure he'll remember that. And we'll miss him, but we'll see. We may see him again somewhere down the road, but it's still pretty bad. Rob, speaking of emotional moments, I know we're talking about the game, but I kind of think yesterday's press garbage bag day almost usurped the game. Like, Dan Clark pouring out his heart about everything about the offensive line. And you go, okay, I'm not sure of the order of that. Dan probably went first, didn't he?
Dan was first, yeah.
And then you make Cody cry. Way to go, you heartless columnist, gormless columnist. You kind
That certainly wasn't the intent. Let me explain the process here. Because you were, your flight didn't get in until after the Rough Riders media availability began. And once you get down there, basically the doors are locked due to COVID protocol. So it's not like you could be a late interloper. So I'm handling all this while you're luxuriating somewhere above 38,000 feet above Earth. And so in order to buy myself some time, I wrote a column that morning on how the Rough Riders need to build around Cody Fajardo. The column went online probably an hour, hour and a half before the actual Rough Rider media gathering. So my plan was to run that column in the Tuesday paper, upgrade it, update it with a quote or two or something that was said during the press conference, and then do an accompanying story on whatever was most interesting. That turned out to be Dan Clark by several lengths. So I wanted to buy myself some time to just only have one story to do once I got back to back home, and then just touch up the Cody Fajardo question. So in keeping with the premise of the Cody Fajardo column, I wanted to ask him, what does it mean to you to be the quarterback of the Rough Riders? Because that was all about Cody Fajardo being the foundational player. I wanted to get his thoughts on how important it was to him to be that person. And, he was very emotional. I felt there was certainly no intent on my part to evoke that kind of reaction. It seemed to me to be somewhat of a softball question, but it really struck a chord with him, and a lot really hit him at one moment. And there were a lot of emotions that welled up, and it's, that video is on our website. It's been shown at a lot of places. But I felt badly because I certainly didn't want to put Cody in a bad spot there. I was basically doing that to get a quote to put into my column about Cody Fajardo, where I could just kind of plunk. I almost had a spot for that quote. I was just going to plunk it in and file the column when I got back home. And I ended up just running that early column online only and writing an entirely new one it was basically 1,000 words, and 900 of them were Cody Fajardo. There was a question the initial question I asked that had elicited a 2-minute response and a very emotional one. And then Jamie Nye, as a follow-up, asked a question about social media, mental health, and things like that, that also elicited a very good response. So I basically just let Cody roll. But that really tells you so much about him. It tells you what this means to him. It gave you a peek behind the curtains as to what it's like for a pro athlete. And sometimes there's this facade and they carry on like nothing bugs them, and that they're impervious to the nature of fan reactions and things like that. And how many times you hear them, athletes say, oh, I don't read the newspapers. I don't pay attention to the media. I don't pay attention to social media. Well, guess what? Most of them do. Others just hide it and are somewhat disingenuous about it. And what you get with Cody Fajardo was a very genuine person, a very sincere person, someone who I think is well suited to be the quarterback of this team for the next decade. And I hope anybody who's been on Cody Fajardo's case watches that and really takes to heart what he said, and maybe gives them cause to reassess some of the opinions that they've formed or promulgated. That's my sermon for the day. But I got promulgated in, so I'm in a good mood.
That's good. I'm going to flip that one up. One of the things I got out of that interview from Cody, and maybe is a little different, is how much pressure they've been under this year.
Oh, yes.
From the COVID restrictions to not being able to do anything, to the pressure of playing, still not being able to do anything, from having a fun game where you're just excited to go out, still not being able to go out. The testing, and I got tested on the weekend for the first time, and I kind of sense it. It's not fun being tested. I didn't have to do much. I just had the quick rapid test and stuff. We're going, this is only twice. Imagine going through that every day. Because no matter what happens, no matter how well you look after yourself, still in the back of your head, what happens if I test positive?
Yeah.
What happens now? And it's just
that's not just a Cody Fajardo issue or a player issue. That has ramifications for the entire team.
So when I had my little test, I have to wait 5 minutes for the red line to come up.
And you could have had another haircut during those five minutes.
I could have.
Sorry.
But it's a 5 minutes of uncertainty and thinking, Yeah, I've done everything. I wear a mask. I keep my distance from people. I don't push my. I went out for the media with dinner the other night, and that's we've done that. But there's still that uncertainty. So imagine doing that. If you go through the Maxwell test, where it has a great big long stick that pokes into the back of their brains, going through that every day and dealing that every day and dealing with the joking. And I think what I saw Cody break down, it was a breakdown. It was emotion, and we love it. Actually, athletes, don't be afraid to show emotions. I think I'm going to give kudos to the media. Everybody treated it the right way. There was nobody saying, oh, Cody's soft. Cody should be tougher than that. He should be a man, because real men don't cry. But that was Cody being himself. And absolutely, I think the media deserves a little bit of credit for handling a sensitive situation. Everybody did well. And I think nobody's questioning Cody's toughness or anything today. They're just saying he was emotional. Anyway, back to that. All of the pressure they were under, I wonder how many guys, because I kind of noticed when he was in the post game, he just kept looking over our heads. He never really looked at anybody when he was talking. And I know sometimes Cody can go to slip into Cody speak for us, where he's kind of got this, not routine, but he just knows what he's going to say. And I was wondering, I saw how emotional he was there. And then to see what happened on Monday, I just went, wow. He is a guy they got to build around. Can I bring up, do you think they need to get a little more experienced backup quarterback in there who might bring in a little competition for him, maybe press him a little more and just give him an extra body? You think they can go maintain this current depth chart of Harker and or Fine and Harker and Fine and keep going?
Well, I think the writing is on the wall with that with regard to Isaac Harker. When the Rough Riders demoted him to number three and off the active roster at the end of the year, I think that's pretty much it there. Very surprising move, but with the quarterbacking depth chart you thought they had a few weeks ago is no longer applies moving forward. Paxton Lynch is certainly out of the equation now.
Yep.
With the vaccination issue, the demotion of Isaac Harker speaks volumes. So it's pretty much Mason Fine and Cody Fajardo, and that is their quarterbacking depth chart. So they're going to have to do something, but I think that's going to be more of an apprentice position. I don't think they need to bring in somebody to push Cody. I think they need somebody who can come in and should he get hurt, move the offense. They need somebody to be able to do what Isaac Harker did against Edmonton on November 2nd, 2019. Mm-hmm. They need that kind of quarterback. I wouldn't chew up some salary cap money trying to bring in someone who can challenge Cody Fajardo for the number one spot. I think he's certainly deserving of a coronation receiving that position by acclamation. I just think they need to build around Cody Fajardo. They don't need to tear him apart or tear him down.
Rob, we have to take a break here.
How is that for ESP?
Jinx.
We almost said that in unison, and we don't choreograph these things or plan them very well, so I'm pretty proud of us for that one. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back, and I'm going to show some images of my dog, and then we'll resume the podcast, which will turn into a podcast because of my dog, Candy. So bear with us. We'll be right back. I'm Rob. There's Murray, and here's Candy. Look at her. She's curled up in a little ball.
A ball of candy.
She's so cute. Candy balls are available at your favorite confectionery.
For them, isn't it?
I'm sorry?
It's the time of year for candy balls, too. Christmas.
Is there something called a candy ball?
I think they remember that. I don't know. I have to look up to that. I remember.
I'm diabetic. I got to avoid those things. Let's take a closer look at the Rough Riders and what they need to do now. My assessment is, it was interesting what Craig Dickinson said yesterday talking about the lines. And I think it was reasonable to think going into the Western Final that it was the offensive line that was a primary area, that would be a primary area of focus going into the offseason. After seeing the Rough Riders get the ball run down their throats in Winnipeg, I'm not sure that there's not some issues that need to be resolved along the defensive line as well. Not only that, they didn't get a lot of pressure. And maybe that's just a function of playing Winnipeg, who doesn't let anybody get any pressure. But if you're going to win a championship, you have to go through Winnipeg, and you have to get past Stanley Bryant. You have to get past Patty Neufeld, etc. So suddenly, if your line is found wanting, if both of your lines are found wanting against that Winnipeg team, and I think you pretty much know that team is going to be formidable as long as they are so stout on the offensive and defensive lines, you've got to fight fire with fire and might with might. And I think that necessitates a very close look, not only at the offensive line, which is an obvious area that requires refurbishment, but what can they do to make that defensive line better? Because you got to find a way to somehow get to the quarterback and get past those fortresses that are up front on the Bomber offensive line.
Well, I see the lines as 1A and 1B problem. 1A is the offensive line. I think that is just something. Brett Boyko and Andrew Lauderdale and Cameron Jefferson, boy, they had a tough time at the tackles this year. And, a little bit better in the playoffs. But I think the defensive line, that's the gold standard you're going against. I don't know how, and you have to beat it somehow. And I understand that. But you don't face a line like the Blue Bombers every game, fortunately. And I think...
No, but you face that line in a game you've got to win to get to a championship.
Yes, and I don't know how they're going to... And they're going to be good for... Well, I think Winnipeg's going to be good for a long, long time. I think this is there a dynasty in sports? Well, I think if you get back-to-back Grey Cups, that's almost dynasty-like, isn't it, Rob?
Dynastic? Yeah.
Dynastic, is that a word? That's what I was looking for.
You know, it's just... And with all these one-year contracts, and I don't pretend to be familiar with the duration of the Bombers' contracts, but most of the contracts are 1 year, so it's tough to go from year to year in the CFL. But they made it a priority in Winnipeg, and Mike O'Shea was a big part of this, too, to get everybody adjusted and get everybody in under the cap, and that necessitated some bitter pills to swallow when you look at players like Adam Bighill, et cetera, and the pay cuts that they took. So... But they have a way of massaging it in Winnipeg to make it work. And they've created a family environment there where players, once they get there, they really don't want to leave. And I think that makes it more conducive to amicable and successful negotiations. And that's part of the culture there. And so you got to think the Bombers are going to have more than a reasonable facsimile of what they're currently putting on the field a year from now, 2 years from now. Because that's in the water, that's in the oxygen there. And if you want to keep going, finishing second and want to keep losing to Winnipeg, just stay with what you've got. It's going to get you to a certain point, and you'll be able to put a little star beside the team and say, nice job. But if you want to win a Grey Cup, you've got to beat Winnipeg at what they do best, and that is basically manhandling people on both sides of the line.
But that's not something that happens in 1 year, though, Rob. Like that's a little bit of a longer overturn.
You look at 2011, and the Rough Riders had an awful offensive line that year, just absolutely pitiful. And that was, what did they do?
They got
that offseason. They signed Dominic Picard, who not only gave them a starting center, but gave them some meanness.
Yeah.
And they signed Brendan Labatt. And as much as was made over the player moves of Brendan Tamman made in 2013 to build the team that year, for a home field Grey Cup. The foundation was set when they said, we could spend this money on Andy Fantuz, or we could spend this money on Dominic Picard and Brendan Labatt. And that's what they did. They saw that this is their offensive line was as bad then as it was this season. Mm-hmm. And they went out and they got two studs. And I don't know what the free agent pool will consist of this year, but given the prevalence of one-year contracts, they're going to be those type of players. You got to go get them, because that's how you win the West. Otherwise... You're going to keep losing West Finals.
Yeah, I also think the interior of the line, I know Dan Clark got chewed up pretty badly by the Stampede. The interior of the line's pretty good, I think. Evan Johnson was a pretty good signing.
Johnson, Clark, and Ferland are fine. And Logan Ferland, for what he did in year one, having never played at a level higher than junior football, two of those three players are from the Regina Thunder. What an amazing program that is.
Yeah, that's
great. And Evan Johnson... Earlier in the season, it seemed like he had some struggles, but he came around. I don't see that there's a problem with the interior of the line.
It's the tackle.
It's the tackles. And I don't think those are especially tough problems to solve, in that you're talking about Americans, and there's a lot more American tackles who can play than there are Canadian tackles. So there's a supply and demand really doesn't work to their detriment in that case. They've just got to find their equivalent. Well, I shouldn't say that their equivalent of Stanley Bryant, because there may never be one. No. But... They did have
Jamarcus Hendrick here before, too.
But you look again, go back to 2012 and what the Rough Riders did. They traded a lower round draft pick to the Edmonton, now Elks, for Xavier Fulton.
Mm-hmm.
And what a job he did at left tackle. The problem may solve itself if Taron Vaughn can come back and play at the level to which people are accustomed next year. After a year off football and after surgery, that's not assured. But if Taron Vaughn's healthy next year, that takes care of that.
Yeah. You kind of touched a little bit upon the free agency world. I've been doing a quick scan through the, I type in the player's name, contract, type in the player's name, contract in the last couple of days. I usually leave it for that. Based on what I've seen, there's only three guys that are signed through 2022. Cody Fajardo, Brandon Labatt, and Dan Clark. Because I was just getting tired of typing 21 in there. So they've got a lot of free agent work.
Rookie contracts excluded.
Rookie contracts, yes, that's excluded. But some of them, that's only KSB. Sorry, Schaefer Baker is one of them. I think Braden Lanius. I have to double check those. I don't want to say anything uncertain. But yeah, so they've got a lot of work to do. And Craig Dickinson had said yesterday that they want to sign their own guys first. Now, you and I used to know that seemed to be back in the day on garbage bag day, they'd sign a contract and they put it in the drawer and they'd announce it as the season goes on. With the new CBA coming up, I don't know how many guys are going to be willing to do that now, to sign a contract and lock themselves into whatever the new CBA is going to bring. Well, so it'll be an interesting offseason. But they still got to play.
You sign the contract, you get a signing bonus. And the players played for reduced salaries in 2021 due to the shortened season. So it's nice to get an influx of cash in the middle of the winter. Yeah. And that's what a signing bonus would bring. So I wouldn't be surprised to see some very surgical moves by the Rough Riders leading up to free agency. I think the players see that this is a place that they want to be in. I think they generally like playing for Craig Dickinson. They find Jeremy O'Day to be fair. And they certainly enjoy the fan base when they can actually get out in public and mingle.
With the Bombers, you know, the players are going to see this sold-out stadium or near sold-out stadium for the West Final. They're seeing the money that's coming in, and they kind of want theirs. They did their part this year, and looking at next year, they kind of want to get their money out of it, which is a normal way of thinking. But, you know, are the Bombers going to be positioned to do that with the salary cap, whatever it is? So that may allow some room for some movement, more movement that the Bomber players. It's a great place to play. I read a quote today from some guy who said, it's just like playing in the NFL here. They treat you like NFL. They're doing that. The Bombers are doing that for the Grey Cup. All the families are coming. They're finding some way around COVID to get these families across the border so they can see their loved ones playing the Grey Cup. So I would think the Riders would do the same thing.
Well, especially with the facilities that they have here. It's NFL caliber facilities at the stadium.
How crazy, Rob? You know, and everybody's talked about money. The Bombers are supposedly going to have a pretty solid year. You know, like Wade Miller, I didn't say how much, but it sounds like they may even make money. Like, fine, unfathomable in a 14-game season with all the expenses, but it may not be as hard hit as reading that in one of the, I think it was Paul Friesen might have written that, I think. But anyway.
The thing is, they get 31,000 people for a West Final a week after the Rough Riders get 24,001 paid attendance. And the weather was a lot worse in Winnipeg on Sunday than it was the previous weekend in Regina. I'm still getting feedback on what happened to the Rough Rider playoff attendance. And what does this mean going forward for the Riders as far as season ticket renewals, et cetera, et cetera? Is this just strictly a function of COVID, or is there some fatigue there? Is there a diminution of the fan base? And you got to remember, too, that the smaller the Rider crowds, the longer it takes to pay off the stadium, because there's that facility fee that is appended to every ticket. And that facility fee is the mechanism by which the stadium is supposed to be repaid in 30 years. But it's going to take longer than 30 years now with the COVID killing off the 2020 season and attendance being down this year. So that's their whole formula. And it was predicated upon the expectation of a pretty robust crowd and a series of robust crowds. What's coming up in 2022? Has this fan base been overtaken by the Bombers in terms of sheer devotion and active support?
Can you ask me that after the 2022 Grey Cup? I think we have a year. I think a lot of people supported the Riders, even though the numbers were down, because they want to get that ticket to the Grey Cup game in 2022. That is going to be the return to normalcy with that 22. Even Hamilton's Grey Cup this week. This Hamilton's Grey Cup. It's kind of a Grey Cup light, almost a COVID light. In the sense, you know, like the Eastern teams are all getting together to put together their own sort of a Riderville. The Western teams, with the exception of the Edmonton Elks, have the spirit of Edmonton. So it's more of a COVID aware Grey Cup with no social distancing and stuff. 2022, hopefully, we're out of this world. Yeah, well, whatever I know. And it can be a normal Grey Cup where you're shoulder to shoulder with fans, and that money would come there and maybe generate and get some income. Because I'm with you. I'm concerned. And be honest, Rob, I've been asked hundreds of times, and we don't have the answers. We don't know why. We think it's COVID. It could be too much. It could be the weather.
It's undeniably COVID, but to what extent?
The Bombers had 6 weeks to sell this game.
Yeah.
Does that work into their advantage if you think about that? That's the Riders might have had 2 weeks to sell their game and people know it's on. Maybe people just aren't interested in football in late November and December. That could be another thing. Like, I know the Grey Cup's sold out, but it's a sold out at a 24,000 seat stadium. What does that say? And someone said to me, my nephew mentioned this 400, he looked at the Grey Cup, it was $400 for the tickets he was interested in. Well, he's not going to spend $400 to go see a Grey Cup in Hamilton. He likes the CFL, but not that much. So it'll be interesting.
$400 for a Grey Cup ticket. I remember my tickets to the 76 Grey Cup were like 20. We looked at that and it was, $20 for a Grey Cup ticket.
Bucks, I know. Well, you know, hey, I hate to say it. I went to a Leafs game on a Saturday night and I spent over $200 for my for our tickets. So it does happen. It's an expensive world if you want to go to sporting events.
I went to a Leafs game in December 2019. And during intermission, the 263-pound version of me had to have popcorn and a Coke. So I went and went to the concession. $18 for a popcorn and a Coke at a Leafs game.
I think so, I spent $16 on a beer. I'm pretty sure one of the big, I am not small beer. Hey, I like a big beer. But we go to such rare, it's so rare that I go to a game like that I don't really scrimp on what I'm going to get. I'm going to spend the money. And that's my own way of doing things. But that's like, Rob, do you want to talk about the Grey Cup? Are you excited about it?
I had my plans. I've been looking at Toronto's jazz clubs. I was going to sneak into Toronto a couple of nights. I looked at the website for the Jazz Bistro. I looked at the website for the Rex. I took a look at the NHL schedule and saw that the Leafs were playing Chicago. And I even sent you an inquiry. Hey, Murr, on Saturday night, want to go see the Leafs play Chicago? So I think I ultimately jinxed the Saskatchewan
Roughriders. Yeah, you did jinx us. I think there's a game, too.
I just don't see anybody touching Winnipeg. I mean, the Toronto should have beaten Hamilton last week. Yeah, it's a home game for Hamilton, but Winnipeg is just so vastly superior to any other team. I mean, I think the real Grey Cup was played 2 days ago as we record this at IG Field.
Well, there are two great games on Sunday too, though. Fun to watch. I just haven't watched all of the Grey Cup games or the East Fountain because I had to get to the stadium, but they're fun down in the middle.
Yeah, those 10-yard field goals are exciting, aren't they?
Yeah. Jagar Davis might be the best player in the league.
That pass knockdown?
Like he was like a 180-pound defensive back making him play. He's turned his head. He played it perfectly. His hips and his feet were right. And I'm going, holy smokes, is that a great play by? And he can maybe make the difference. If I can be completely honest with people, I always am. I grew up a Tiger Cats fan. I grew up in Sudbury. I've been black and gold. I bleed black and gold. I'm hoping.
Look at your environment.
It's kind of hard to avoid that. It's been 1999 since the Tiger Cats won a Grey Cup.
Ronnie was coaching.
And when he took over that team, they had a great defense and not much of an offense. I think that's what it was. And Ronnie
then
generated.
They bring in Danny McManus and they bring in Darren Flutie.
And they change it all in that 1999. So it's been since then. And I know I'm unbiased and I live in Saskatchewan. I still can't give up on my Tiger Cats. And I think people understand that. So I'm hoping that somehow the home field advantage, maybe Dane Evans they'll have a week to study. Maybe Dane Evans can come out of there and lead them on the way. Gerard Davis, Brandon Banks comes back to being Brandon Banks.
Yeah, and Brandon Banks is a Brandon Banks game. They got a pretty good receiving core there. Yeah, Don Jackson's a really good running back.
So they bring them all, and maybe the football gods smile down upon the Tiger Cats like they did for the Blue Bombers in 19, and somehow they pull out a win. Now, that's my heart. My brain knows the Blue Bombers there used to be a hole in their kicking game, and it's still a little bit there, but, you know, a team that plays that well in the second half, I think, usually carries over to the next game, and the Bombers are going to carry it over. And in my brain, I know they should win. It shouldn't be. I think we may be enjoying the Arkells at the half more than the first half because the Bombers might be that dominant. But in my heart thinks just one little one for the Tiger Cats and we'll be fine for a little while.
I never knew you were a tender person, Murr.
I know.
Beneath that grizzled visage lies a softy. I know, a sentimentalist, perhaps.
I've been keeping it inside since I've lived in Saskatchewan. Well, no, I remember in 89, I was the most popular guy in the province because everybody wanted me to go watch the Grey Cup with them. I liked going to watch the Grey Cup game with Ron Petrie, because I didn't have to work that night. I was on the desk. And watching Ron Petrie and all the guys, I can't remember all the guys in his basement, just absolutely losing it when the Riders won. And I thought, you know, that was a good thing. We'll give them that. But maybe not.
What a game that was.
It was a game like that. Hey, Tony, no one remembers Tony Champion's catch, eh?
Oh, they do. They do.
Well, they do. We just have to
read my book on the 89 Rough Riders. I interviewed Tony Champion. He was wonderful.
And I still remember
with Suter broken ribs.
And Suter watching it. I think that was a pretty good catch. Glenn Suter even saying
yeah.
that.
And you know, Harry Skipper, after Champion makes a catch, like, what are you going to do as a defensive back?
Yeah.
It's hard to believe that 32 years have elapsed since that game. I mean, I was at it. I was sitting up in the 500 level, and I won a bet against a Tiger Cats fan. George Bentley and I put a 20 on it.
Bentley, my other Tiger Cats fan.
I did profit upon off that, which was good because that was an expensive, impulsive weekend trip.
Hey,
but I can't see Winnipeg losing this one. I couldn't see them losing last weekend. That team is like a carburetor. You just throw the opponent in there and they just get chewed up.
Let's give you a little credit. Does Zach Kolaris get credit for what happens there? The fact that he had all of those turnovers, didn't get flustered, and comes in, and then the second half played very well.
And got some great catches by Darvin Adams.
Oh, and Kenny Lawler's that one he stretched out. Yeah.
You know, I mean, another inch or two, and maybe we're talking about a different game. And but he put the pass. He basically threw those passes where the receiver could get them or nobody could get them.
And he handed the ball off nicely to Andrew Harris.
Very efficiently, very artistically. Very efficiently,
which we overlook a little bit, but you got to do it right because the guy's got to go.
But here's something I keep thinking. You know, Cody Fajardo is getting so much heat. What if you put Cody Fajardo behind the Winnipeg Blue Bombers offensive line? Honestly, I think Cody Fajardo is MOP this year and not Zach Kolaris.
Yeah.
You know, and then so much is made about Jason Moss and the strategy. And I've criticized him. You've criticized him. I think my dog has criticized him. But how do you, if you're Jason Moss, how do you strategize with one arm tied behind your back? And that's basically the predicament that Cody Fajardo and Jason Moss were in this year with that offensive line. And so I want to see what the Riders can do with an offensive line that is more reminiscent of 2019 or 2013 or even 2012. Or 1976 or 1966, and not something that reminds me of 2011, 1979, 2016. There's only so much you can do when you have that offensive line. And Zach Kolaris had a really good year, a great year. He should be the most outstanding player this year, and good for him. But he's also in a situation that is very conducive to success offensively. And I'm not sure that Jason Moss or Cody Fajardo were. And I think the issues that the actual or perceived issues that pertain to them were symptomatic of the Rough Riders' problems and certainly not the cause.
It's also interesting to think they had how many months to get ready for this season and maybe work out those issues that you mentioned with Jason Miles. But maybe
how do you when Taron Bond gets hurt in camp? How do you when on right before training camp Brendan Labatt opts out of the season?
And who was the other tackle that retired?
Kobe Cofield retires. Cyrus Kuindijo decides to retire. And then injuries start to mount. Losing Shaq Evans in week two, I think just that was a blow that the offense never really entirely recovered from.
And a single target on Sunday to Shaq Evans.
Yeah.
Not one.
I'm going to rewatch the game. I just want to see if there's any evidence that they even looked to him before looking somewhere else. It just, that was baffling. And a lot has been made about Shaq Evans and he was a very frustrated player. And is there friction between Shaq Evans and Cody Fajardo? Is there discord between Shaq Evans and Jason Moss? No. Shaq Evans is a tremendously proud athlete, a tremendously accomplished athlete. And for whatever reason, it just didn't work for him this year. And, you know, Glenn Suter talked a bit on CKRM the other day about maybe there just became a trust issue because very quickly, Cody Fajardo developed the kind of rapport with Duke Williams this year that he had with Shaq Evans in 2009. I just think Shaq needs a fresh start in 2019, a full season and a healthy season. And I think you'll see a Shaq Evans that reminds you of 2019. I hope they don't give up on him. I don't think that's just a guy who just he's shown he wants to be here. Shaq Evans could have made more money signing elsewhere, and he signed two contracts in Saskatchewan when I'm sure the offers were as lucrative, if not more, elsewhere.
And
Shaq Evans is if they bail on Shaq Evans, I think that's a huge mistake.
But Cody also mentioned that Shaq Evans was still part of the team, was still enthusiastic, still passionate, still showing, like running down there and the guy scored touchdowns, which they don't do that often, to celebrate
those. Not get a lot of exercise doing that.
To getting those kind of things, to celebrating those kind of things. But I think just he never really recovered from that foot injury. And, you know, we mentioned it too, losing Kyran Moore to a knee injury. There's another big, one of their deep receivers who could have contributed a lot. So there's the injuries, but...
He's and such an elusive player. He was, you know, he's their most elusive offensive player.
We don't, you know, it's because we're at the end of the season. We can look back, and I've mentioned this many, many times. I still can't get over that Thursday with four torn Achilles.
Yeah, within what 10 minutes or six minutes or something?
6 minutes, and you go like, and it's still when you think about that, and you go, and then another one a couple weeks later with Williams, and then you know, then another one. Ricardo Lewis has one. So six torn Achilles on one team. In all my life in sports, I've heard of, but in life, Darren Durant was the only guy I'd ever heard of tearing an Achilles with the Riders. In my time, there might be some in the background. But
you know, Corey Sheets did it before he was a Rough Rider and after he was a Rough Rider, but not during. And
so let's have some credit to Jeremy O'Day, to Craig Dickinson, to the training staff for getting getting them through a season that's just been incredibly challenging. And literally, sometimes when teams say they battle through adversity, like the Blue Bombers say they battle through adversity, I'm trying to wonder.
Was the coffee not at the optimal temperature one morning? What adversity did the Bombers have?
No, and then that's the kind of part you go like, and there probably was. They maybe had a flight issue, or
I think somebody sneezed.
Andrew Harris was gone for 7 weeks. That's adversity, I guess. But I don't think they lost. They lost two meaningless games in that time, so.
They had the Kenny Lawler situation, and he ended up missing a game. But they didn't have the mounting injuries that the Rough Riders did. There was a pretty – luck is a part of it, too, and the Bombers had, I think, more good fortune than not. But I think when you look at this Rough Rider team, or maybe this is a good way to wrap up, I think they squeezed that tube as much as they could squeeze that tube this year. Yeah, they you know, with a play here and there, they could be playing again in another week or this weekend. But realistically, when you look at this team, getting to a West final with an injury list that at one point they had 17 guys on the 6-game injured list, and not just for stashing purposes; those were legitimate injuries. Yeah. When you've got that many injuries and you're still a competitive football team, more than competitive football team. I don't think there's any reason for the Riders to hang their heads. They're disappointed, and I'm sure there's a few what-ifs being asked. But all in all, I think they squeezed that tube as much as you could squeeze that tube.
Yeah.
And
Craig mentioned that yesterday with the offensive line. Maybe that's as good as the offensive line can play, or as well as the offensive line can play.
They didn't give up a sack the week before.
No,
and we've seen games where Cody has been more under more pressure than he was this past week. And didn't he make some amazing plays when he was escaping the pocket with those little throws right before he get to the line of scrimmage when it looked like he was doomed and he'd flip the ball to William Powell and resourcefully get something? And again, those are kind of some of the things that are overlooked in the equation. But given better luck, given a better offensive line, given some astute signings during the offseason, I think the Riders can be an improved team next year. For them to do what they did in light of the circumstances they faced, miraculous is too strong a word and too effusive a form of praise, but it certainly is admirable and worthy of commendation.
Now, this is just going to extend us a little bit longer. I meant to ask this earlier. Do they have to get to the Grey Cup? Being the home team in the Grey Cup, is that a must-do? That's reality. They have to be in the Grey Cup.
Well, even if the Grey Cup wasn't here next year, I would say they have to get to the Grey Cup, because what else is missing from the checklist? You know, they've been in the past two West Finals. They have finished first in the West. They've had home playoff games three consecutive seasons. The mantra, though, has been sustained success. And how do you define success? You do that not by posting a double-digit victory total, not by having a home playoff game. You win those home playoff games. You win West Finals, you get to the Grey Cup, and then you win that. They had a 13-5 team that didn't even get to the Grey Cup, and the team that they lost to in the West Final in 2019 won the Grey Cup. They lost to a third place team. So the Grey Cup could be on Neptune next year, and I would suggest that the Rough Riders have to not only get to it and win it, because that's the next step.
Yeah, that's good. And I think that's a good spot to end it, isn't it?
I do. I got some writing to do. I know you do too, because I ordered you to do some.
Yes.
Get your 1,000 words in by 12:30. I'm just going to give us the little, mention the little whatever it is at the end, and then I'm going to show my dog again, and then we can sign off until next.
Outro, I guess.
An outro. If you enjoy the podcast, please leave a review and a 5-star rating. It helps us grow the podcast. And this is the first. I'm going to try and not blow this for the first time. You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Only one paragraph to go. If you'd like to send us a question, you can email Rob, that's me, at rvanstone@postmedia.com, and we'll read it on the show. You can follow me, Rob, on Twitter, at Rob Vanstone, or Murray, at Murray LP. And if you follow me on Twitter, you'll get to see lots of photos of my beautiful dog, Candy. Murr, thank you so much. Great job this season. We're not done yet. We're going to be back
next
week. And we'll also be back as circumstances dictate during the winter, such as important player moves, important personnel moves, free agency, draft, or if my dog is being especially cute. For Murray McCormick and for Candy, I'm Rob Vanstone. Thanks so much, and we'll talk to you next week. Take care and stay warm.